There were some headlines recently which said that up to 56,000 children in the UK may be prescribed statins, according to scientists. Well, it's a fairly distressing headline, that's for sure. And to talk about it is guest of the show many times before, Zoe Harcombe, who's a researcher, author, blogger and public speaker in the field of diet and health. But to give a correct title, Dr. Zoe Harcombe. Good morning. Welcome to the show, Zoe.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me.
Nice to have you back. Well, where do we begin with this? Can we go back to the beginning, Zoe? Because with the world of statins, we've talked about it many times on the show before. We've had Malcolm on the show before, as you know, about this, who's written various things about statins. Can we talk about cholesterol and go back to the basics? Because that's one of the things I love about you. You're able to describe things in a very basic sense so that people like me can understand it. Cholesterol, discuss.
Yeah, I mean, That is such a great place to start, because statins essentially try to stop the body's own mechanism by which it makes cholesterol.
Yeah.
So it's very good to remind ourselves of what cholesterol actually does.
Yes.
And put simply, we die without cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
We die instantly. So if statins actually fully worked and stopped the production of cholesterol entirely, the first person to ever have put a statin in their mouth would have died instantly.
Okay.
Now, there's some days when I think, oh, you know, gosh, wouldn't that have been awful? And there are many, many more days when I think, wouldn't that have been wonderful? Because then these things would never have got off the ground. And we wouldn't be, just on a regular daily basis, partially impairing the body's ability to produce cholesterol in millions of people worldwide. So what does cholesterol do? Apart from the fact we die instantly without it, it essentially builds and maintains all of our cells in the body. Every single cell in the body is dependent upon cholesterol to exist as a cell. Take the cholesterol away and we end up as a big puddle on the floor. We have no cell structure in our body. Plays a vital role in hormone production, so essentially none of our hormones work without cholesterol, and that includes the sex hormones that reproduce.
Okay.
So not only do we die instantly without cholesterol, we would die out the human race without cholesterol. You could not reproduce, which is why it's so particularly concerning when we've had some crazy people in the past say, oh, why don't we just put statins in the water supply?
Oh.
You know, hello, you'd never have a healthy baby born again. Something Malcolm says, actually, which I love, is, you know, why do eggs have so much cholesterol? Because you need a lot of cholesterol to make a healthy chicken, which, of course, is what an egg goes on to be. If left alone. We need cholesterol for digestion. We can't digest without cholesterol. And, of course, the brain, which is why statins have such significant impact on brain and cognitive function. The brain is only a couple of percent of the body's weight, but it actually contains approximately 25% of the body's cholesterol.
Incredible.
In its totality, which is literally incredible.
Yeah.
But that does explain why a number of people start statins and then stop them, because they say, you know, I lost my memory, I lost my mind, I lost my good mood, you know, I lost my cognitive ability.
Yeah, they use the word foggy a lot, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Brain
absolutely.
Fog.
Yeah, and then probably, you know, the final one, as if the others weren't enough, cholesterol is absolutely vital in the vitamin D process. Vitamin D is actually made by synthesizing cholesterol on the skin. So when the sun shines on the skin, as it does in Spain far more than in Wales, the body is actually at that point turning cholesterol in the skin, on the skin layer, into vitamin D. And of course, you know, without vitamin D, we don't have healthy bones. But we also now believe that vitamin D is a vital nutrient in things, chronic diseases such as heart disease, cancer, dementia, diabetes. We are learning more and more about vitamin D. So messing up our fantastic mechanism by which we make this completely vital substance, I personally think, is a catastrophic idea, and I'm not alone in thinking that.
Absolutely not. And the kind of pub talk about cholesterol stems from the fact that we are told, or it is inferred, that there is such a thing as a good cholesterol and a bad cholesterol.
Which is so funny, because basically what they've said is, okay, the cholesterol hypothesis doesn't really stack up on its own. You know, it's almost like after 20 years or so, they've admitted that. I've got some great charts on one of my blogs where I show, if you look at all the World Health Organization data for 192 countries, this is raw data, I've not messed around with it in any way, taken it straight off the World Health Organization site, and you plot the average cholesterol of each country mm-hmm. against the heart deaths for that country and then total deaths for that country.
Right.
There is an inverse relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So the higher the country's cholesterol, the lower the death rate. The lower the country's cholesterol, the higher the death rate. And that is for every country in the world. So total cholesterol doesn't stack up. So then they had to come up with another little, you know, sort of con for the person in the pub. So they said, oh, there's good cholesterol and there's bad cholesterol. There's not. If you look up the chemical formula for cholesterol, it's C27H46O, I think, from memory.
Right.
And that is the chemical formula for cholesterol. There is no good version or bad version.
Mm.
When they talk about good versions and bad versions, they're actually talking about things called lipoproteins.
Right.
And lipoproteins are little taxis. If you drop olive oil in water, you'll notice that it doesn't mix. It just sits there on the top.
Indeed it does.
So when we need to transport fats around the body to do their vital life-saving work, you can't just drop the fat into the bloodstream.
Mm.
So it travels around in these little taxis called lipoproteins, and they're fat friendly on the inside and water friendly on the outside. So they glide through the essentially water bloodstream mm-hmm. really, really happily, and then they get to cells that they see are damaged, and then they stop to drop off their cholesterol and fat and protein and other lipids that do all this great repair work. So there are taxis called low-density lipoproteins, LDLs.
Right.
And there are taxis called high-density lipoproteins. And the density just comes from how concentrated are they. So the high-density ones are smaller. So essentially the stuff in there is more dense, more concentrated. And the LDL ones are bigger. So
okay.
They're lower-density lipoproteins. But they're just taxis. And the LDLs go from the liver off around the body to deposit the vital fats.
Mm-hmm.
And then the HDL taxis pick up whatever wasn't needed by the cell to take it back to the liver for, guess what, recycling.
Right.
Now, you know, surely if cholesterol was so bad, first of all, the body wouldn't make it and wouldn't be making it every second of the day, and particularly when we're asleep repairing at night. And secondly, if it was so bad, the body would be trying to get rid of it as
yeah.
fast as possible, which is what it does with glucose.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
glucose is bad, so the body just tries to get it out of the bloodstream as fast as it possibly can. It doesn't do that with cholesterol. It's so vital. It goes back to the liver for recycling, and then it chugs off around the body again to do its vital work. So there is no such thing as good and bad cholesterol. There are taxis.
Mm.
Lipoproteins. So if your doctor starts talking to you about good and bad cholesterol, you know that your doctor doesn't know what he or she is talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, with statins, you've already alluded to it, that if they worked completely, we'd be dead. But what they do is they inhibit a part of the cholesterol production pathway. And what they do is they work upstream of something which is pretty important in the body, which we've heard mentioned many times before, but maybe it's worth mentioning again, coenzyme Q10, CoQ10.
You know your stuff indeed. You've done a beautiful description there of what's called the mevalonate pathway. It's the
Good.
Pathway by which cholesterol is made. CoQ10, if you go into any health food store, you'll see CoQ10 on the shelves. And it's often called the body's energy spark plug. So a lot of people will go into a health food store or, you know, a chemist, pharmacy, and they'll ask for CoQ10 as a little tablet supplement because they know it peps them up. It gives them more energy. It is this little sort of firing spark plug in the body. But unfortunately, it is, as you say, downstream in the part that statins block. Now, this is so interesting. When the pharma manufacturers first developed statins, they realized that they were impairing a really important part of the energy spark plug in the body.
Mm.
So the original statins came with a patent for adding CoQ10 into the statin product.
Okay.
So they recognized that at the same time they were going to mess up your energy in the body. They were going to try and compensate for what they were about to do.
I see.
And then apparently they never bothered adding it. They got the patent, whether due to cost or whether they didn't like the fact that it was effectively admitting we are causing serious problems here to your energy production, they just left it out. So we are now having millions upon millions of people worldwide taking statins without the CoQ10 that they knew they should have accompanied alongside.
I see. And the drop is what? Approximately 40%, up to 40% loss
absolutely.
Of CoQ10. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. And that's significant. You know, that's huge. No wonder, again, people on statins report muscle aches, tiredness, fatigue, just can't be bothered to get up and go for a walk. And, of course, that then causes even more health problems. You know, if you go to some academic, independent, completely independent of the pharmaceutical industry, there's a fabulous website called the NNT.com, which is the number needed to treat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good way of putting statistics. So instead of all this stuff they put in the paper of, oh, you know, you're 30% less likely to die, which might mean, you know, 1 in 100,000 people were going to die last year, but 1.3 in 100,000 people will now die this year. That's actually a 30% difference, but it's still 1 in 100,000 people. You wouldn't even bother
yep.
about it.
Yep.
So, you know, they present the figures that the pharmaceutical industry does very in a very scary way to make you think you should be on statins. If you go to the number needed to treat, I think, again, off the top of my head, it's something like if you treat 154 people for 5 years, one may benefit.
Interesting. Interesting.
And then you think, and of those 154 people, we now know, and this is not in dispute, somewhere close to 20% will be experiencing side effects, whether the cognitive impairment or muscle aches, or it can really disrupt the gastric digestive process because of the role of cholesterol. So people report terrible stomach aches and all those kind of gastric problems that go with that. So, you know, 1 in 5 are having horrible side effects, and 1 in 154 over a period of 5 years might experience a benefit. Again, a brilliant paper came out a couple of years ago, and some, I think it was led by Dutch researchers, and they said the benefit might be 3 or 4 days in 5 years. So you are literally buying yourself, if you're the lucky one that is going to get some benefit, you're buying yourself a couple of days. But then everyone is at risk of these serious side effects of these very, very powerful drugs.
So is there any plus to this? Is there a case, for example, for people who've had a cardiac event, maybe a heart attack or possibly even a stroke, where statins are actually a good thing?
You can look at, it's a great question, you can look at the NNT as well on the website for what is called secondary prevention. So that's where somebody has already had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers needed to treat, I wish I had this on the top of my head, I think it comes down from 1 in 154 to about 1 in 50 or 1 in 60.
Mm.
So it gets better, mm-hmm. it's still not good over 5 years. And the other problem with statins, which is now gathering serious momentum over in the US, is it has become known that they increase the likelihood of developing type 2 diabetes.
Yes.
And it's something like you've got a 1 in 50 chance of developing type 2 diabetes, and you might have a 1 in 60 chance of avoiding another heart incident.
Mm.
And those are pretty serious odds to weigh up.
Yeah.
When we don't think that statins, if they have any benefit, and they probably have some very small benefit in men
mm-hmm.
who've already had a heart attack, really not seen any evidence for women in any circumstance.
Interesting.
It's believed by independent people like Malcolm Kendrick, Uwe Ranskoff, that the likely mechanism by which they may have some effect is that they are known to have anti-inflammatory properties.
Yes.
And the pharmaceutical companies know that because they, a few years ago, started marketing them in the field of arthritis and inflammatory conditions, showing that they have a benefit for those conditions as well. And they might well do.
Mm.
You know, apart from the fact they're going to upset your muscle ability, you might be in such a bad way that, you know, the anti-inflammatory may be slightly better than the even greater worsening of the muscle. You know, it's a real balance. I know a statin is never going to pass my lips. It's just never going to pass my lips in any circumstance. And, you know, the reason that these recent headlines were so scary
yes.
is that they're looking to put children on these medications, up to 56,000 in the UK alone. And this paper in the UK came out almost within a month, the same time as one in the US. Very similar paper, small study, short study, trying to argue, hey, statins are really safe for children. You know, we've only looked at them for about a year. We haven't looked at the, you know, these poor children trying to get to the age of 18 to see if they do actually grow normally. I can't see how they can grow normally when you're impairing the enzyme, the lipids, basically, in the body. So responsible for growth. I don't see how it can happen. But they're trying to argue, oh, you know, we looked at them for a year and the growth, you know, in centimetres was only slightly less and we didn't cause any liver damage. So, yay.
And this is all down to something called, and it's quite complicated, but let's do it, we can do it kind of briefly, FH. You can do the real name.
Yeah, familial hypercholesterolemia.
Fantastic.
So there is a very rare condition called familial hypercholesterolemia. It gets abbreviated to FH for obvious
thankfully
reasons.
Yes.
And it's really rare. It affects about 1 in 500 people. They're trying to start claiming that it's not that rare. So you will now see on pharmaceutical-supported websites, oh, it's 1 in 250. You know, so they've managed to sort of halve the you know, the rareness of it already.
Right.
I don't buy that.
Mm.
It's a genetic condition. If you know your chromosomes, chromosome 19 has a particular defect in this condition that basically means that little taxi we talked about, the LDL taxi, the one that goes out around the body taking the vital lipids to do their vital work, the one that's stupidly called bad cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
This genetic condition means that the LDL, there's a little receptor on every single cell in the body. Like, think of it as like a little hand that's open, ready to grab something.
Okay.
And as the little taxi goes by, the LDL receptor grabs the little LDL taxi, takes it into the cell, takes out all the good stuff, spits it out again, and that's when the HDL taxi comes along and picks up the remnants.
Got it.
So this little grabby thing doesn't work well.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an even more rare form of FH when it really doesn't work at all. So you can see what happens. All the little taxis back up in the bloodstream.
Right.
So you do a blood test, and the person has very high levels of LDL. And it should be into double figures, kind of LDL. You know, they've started to say, oh, we've got children with, you know, 5 mmol per L of LDL, you know, they've got familial hypercholesterolemia. No, they haven't.
Right.
You know, familial hypercholesterolemia, you're going to have double figures of cholesterol and LDL, even when you're on statins.
Right, so for those in Spain, I think they measure it in a slightly different way. So 5 is around 190.
Okay, brilliant.
In the
thank
Spanish
you. Yes,
measurement.
Australia does the same as the UK, and then, of course, America does the mg per DL, which is you guys. Thank you for that quick conversion there. So they... This condition basically has all these little taxis backing up in the bloodstream. Now, my view of FH, and there's an open blog on my site on this, is basically, you know, if LDL is so vital to get into the cells, and you've got a defect, a genetic defect, which means it can't get into the cells, then that's your problem.
Mm.
The fact that you can do a blood test that says, oh, look, they're all backed up in the bloodstream, is just telling you you've got a problem.
Yes.
The real problem is the cell didn't get the cholesterol, all the lipids, all the protein, all the phospholipids. It didn't get all the things that it needed to be healthy. Mm. Now, here's the interesting thing. The heart is also a bunch of cells. The heart also has those little LDL receptors saying, hey, give me those little taxis. I want to take all the goodness out of them.
Yeah.
So maybe you get a bit more heart disease because the heart isn't getting what it needs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we've looked at it completely upside down, the wrong way round. Mm. Maybe instead of trying to put people with FH on statins, we should be saying, how can we get the LDL into the cells?
Right.
Because that's clearly what the body wants to happen.
I see.
You know, and yet we're making it even harder because we're trying to stop the body making any cholesterol that might actually end up getting into the cell. So we're making it even worse. And we actually don't think, again, if you think independently, you're not drug funded, you're not conflicted, you're a logic person. Professor Tim Noakes took a look at my blog and then he spotted something just brilliantly. And he said, there's some research I put on the blog that said it's really interesting. You've got more risk of having heart disease when you've got FH, but only when you're younger.
Right.
If you get to something like 39, you've got no more risk than the rest of the population, and in fact you die far less of cancer, so you end up living longer overall.
Mm-hmm.
So Tim looked at my blog and he said, so hang on a second, he said, so if you've got FH, you've got super high cholesterol for your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
FH doesn't fix itself. You don't lower it by that much when you go on statins. So you've got super high cholesterol forever, and yet you only have higher risk of heart disease up until the age of about 40.
Ah.
So it's not cholesterol. Because you've still got super high cholesterol when you're 60, but you don't die of heart disease.
Mm.
Any more than anyone who hasn't got super high cholesterol. So FH isn't about super high cholesterol, it's about something else.
Interest. And that's their whole raison d'etre for potentially giving children statins.
Totally. Lower the cholesterol. That's their only goal. Lower the cholesterol. Hope to goodness we don't cause liver disease. Do a short study just to suggest that we don't. Hope to goodness we don't stunt their growth or affect, you know, reproduction. What then happens? I think the study said, if I can find the stats here, 17% of the children looked at in this study, aged 5 to 10, were on statins.
Mm-hmm.
57% of the children aged 10 to 15. So you've got boys and girls there pre-puberty and going through puberty. What then happens to their ability to have children? I don't know, you don't know, they don't know.
So it's all there on your blog. Before you go, for those who have taken the bold decision to take their own life in their own hands, as opposed to just being force-fed something by Big Pharma, if you like, and I count myself as one of those who came off statins after learning what they do, is the future for non-statin takers gloomy, or once you have come off them, do the side effects dissipate over time?
Yeah, interesting question. In most people, the side effects seem to disappear quite quickly. So if you're suffering stomach problems, muscle aches, cognitive impairment, a lot of people who come off literally within days realize it must have been the statins because they start feeling their usual self again.
Yeah.
There are incidences, and one of the most famous with this was Dwayne Graveline, who was a NASA astronaut who was put on statins and had such bad memory loss. They worked so well for him. He was sort of leaving the NASA Center car park and he couldn't even remember where he'd left his car or his car keys. You know, he almost got to the point he didn't know who his wife was.
Wow.
Came off them. Memory came back, but not quite as well as you'd expect in a NASA astronaut. Somebody persuaded him to go back on them again and he hadn't, you know, he'd almost forgotten the connection and suffered more damage. He never quite got back to his full cognitive ability that he must have had, otherwise he wouldn't have been selected as an astronaut.
Yeah.
So most people, yes, you'll recover. A few people, sadly, no, there's going to be some permanent damage. These are powerful drugs.
A really quick one, and I'm putting on the spot, I'm ever so sorry, but we did have a caller earlier on who asked me to ask you a specific question, and if you can't answer it, it's not an issue. Basically, one of her family came off statins and recently had a lot of stress, and their cholesterol level was raised, their LDL level was raised. Can stress cause a raise in that temporarily?
Definitely. No, absolutely. I mean, there's a great bit in Malcolm Kendrick's The Great Cholesterol Con, where he runs through, if you're going for your cholesterol test, if you're running late, it will be higher. If you've got white coat syndrome, you don't like going to the doctors, it will be higher.
Right.
Depending what you ate for breakfast, depending what you ate the last 24 hours, there are so many things that can shoot it up temporarily.
Right.
Chronic stress will raise cholesterol and therefore, you know, the little LDL taking the good stuff out. Because remember, cholesterol is the body's repair mechanism. So the body's trying to heal you. The body's recognizing that stress does a lot of damage within the body. So get injured, your cholesterol will go up. Get sick, your cholesterol will go up. That is a good thing.
Yeah.
That is your body saying, I've got this mechanism by which I can heal you. I recognize you're not well. I'm now healing you. So to me, a high cholesterol level, or high for you, is your body telling you, I'm working extra overtime right now. I'm trying to tell you there's something going on. So, you know, eat better, walk better, pare back a little bit, get more sleep, fix that injury, don't overdo athleticism. It's trying to tell you something. So don't just shut it up with statins. Listen to it. and do what it's trying to tell you.
Oh, fascinating. Well, I said to the caller, Sharon, that he's probably more stressed by being told they had to go on statins because their cholesterol had gone up by the stress that caused it in the first place.
That would stress me out for sure.
Zoe, you've been fantastic as always. We'll be back with us in a month. Your website is zoeharcombe.com, and it's full of all kinds of interesting stuff that people can go and find out for themselves. I really appreciate your time, Zoe, and thanks for being...
Thanks so much for having me. Have a great day.
Explaining all so lovely for us. Thank you. Cheers.